We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is in a meeting, which is a shame, because this is going to be a good one, I think. Out Now is a film podcast which has Abe and I normally discussing new movies weekly. However, every now and then we like to do these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentaries or something completely different. This is one of our fun commentary episodes. This is our commentary for the month of August, a fitting month, because the movie that we're talking about came out in August of 1997. And we just had another movie very similar to it in August of this year. Another superhero movie. Yes, that's right. We are going to be talking about Spawn.
Spawn! I want to live forever. I want to learn how to fly. Spawn!
Spawn is a number of things, which we will be talking about for this commentary track. And of course,
but it's not one to spawn a franchise.
Since this... This past month, we saw the future classic that is Suicide Squad. We figure, why not talk about another future movie that should be considered a classic now, surrounding a obscure superhero character that's been brought to cinematic. This is tough already, Spawn. Anyway, okay. Well, joining me to discuss Spawn,
they both have Jais, right?
Yes. Joining me to discuss Spawn, we have from Forbes. He's known as the Violator. It's Scott Mendelson.
Yes.
And from Why So Blue and the Cult Cinema Cavalcade podcast, which recently celebrated its one-year anniversary, he's full of necroplasm. It's Brandon Peters.
Hey, I'm always happy to come on and talk about Martin Sheen comic book movies.
Yes. This is the time to do it.
Rock, meet bottom.
We have Scott, Brandon. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic.
I'm doing pretty well.
Good, good. Ready to dig into Spawn?
Oh, yeah.
Haven't seen it since been a while.
I was about to ask because I know Brandon and I, we've recently rewatched this movie for this commentary track, but it's good to have fresh eyes on this one as well. For those of you that don't know what we're doing exactly, basically Scott, Brandon and I all have the movie Spawn, the director's cut that is, which is pretty much the only version you can find available on Blu-ray or DVD these days. We have that all paused currently. I have it paused at 13 seconds in, by the way, guys, if you want to get to that point. It's where the New Line Cinema logo is fully formed, and it's about to kind of end that little musical theme. So basically, all the three of us are going to have it all paused at that point. If you were watching the movie and listening to us at the same time, pause it right there. Again, that's 13 seconds. If you're not, and you're just listening to us talk about Spawn, good on you. Have fun listening to us and jogging or whatever else you're doing. For those watching, Scott, Brandon, and I, I'm going to count down from three. And on the sound of go, we're all going to press play and just start talking about the movie. It's just that simple. You'll get to hear all of our thoughts of Spawn. So, you guys ready?
Spawn.
Scott, you ready?
Spawn.
That's, of course, the key word involved of being ready to watch Spawn.
It's
so,
the safe word.
Yes.
One, two, Spawn. Three, three, sir. Three.
Okay.
So, is it one, two, Spawn or one, two, three, Spawn?
One, two, three. Spawn, one, two, three.
Okay, I'm going to count down now. Three, two, one, Spawn.
Spawn!
Spawn!
All right. Right away.
That's some great fire there.
We get this fire with narration from who's the actor that plays this person who passed away?
Not Donald Sutherland from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
It's not a lot of people. It's like this is the last person they found to do this role. Who played Merlin in the Excalibur movie? Nicole Williamson.
Yeah.
This was his final role.
Yes.
And we get to see, like, Sega Game Gear graphics.
We see a lot of fire, a lot of flashes to things that'll happen later in the movie. It's a classic Mission Impossible style opening credits here.
Yes. It's got the flames, you know. It's,
we get some fair narration, and now we're going to get this, like, action sequence. It takes place at military airbase, Hong Kong.
I still don't know what's going on in this. Like, we're just seeing Michael Jai White do stuff that, like, he's good at his job.
These Hong Kong people are smoking, so clearly they deserve to die.
That's fire. It's all about fire.
It's all about fire. Yeah.
And this is the R-rated version, so you're seeing more on-screen violence.
I guess so, although it just seems like he shot all the computers behind them and all three of those guys fainted.
The Dark Knight's Michael Jai White?
Yes, Black Dynamite himself, Michael Jai White.
Not fresh... to be confused with Jai Courtney of Suicide Squad.
No, yes, my weird. This is a different Jai, one who's frustratingly constipated throughout the movie based on his performance.
That doesn't narrow it down.
You're right. D.B. Sweeney's up for that award as well in this movie.
Oh, gee,
the cutting edge is D.B. Sweeney.
How do we know it's 90s? It's got D.B. Sweeney.
Yeah. So right now, Michael Jai White's hero character, Al Simmons, is currently targeting a plane with some kind of rocket launcher device using some very fancy night vision goggles that have all
kinds. I'm going to assume these aren't good people, right?
I guess so. I mean, they're Middle Eastern, so, and it's the 90s, so I'm supposed to, I guess.
Goateed Middle Eastern guys.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got robes on. He's no good,
right?
He's
smiling and waving, so that really enhances the evil that we're supposed to feel in this character right now. This is based on some random guy in a mask who just shot up a bunch of people, but we're supposed to assume this is the good guy, and we're watching him destroy the bad guys.
Right.
And there's our first appearance of the Englishman known as Cagliostro. That is his name.
And those civilians just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah. There's a lot of green glow involving him, though.
I'm glad they did that plane explosion in night vision. You think that was a late decision? They're like, what if we just greened it up? Yep, looks better. There we go. So and now, as if they weren't dead enough.
Oh,
as you said, they fainted.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, he finishes the job. That's his magic trick. Watch them do
more fire! You know, karma's going to get him for blowing that up.
And now I get these credits. Now, watching this movie again, just to prepare myself for this commentary track, I was very annoyed by how difficult it is to read all of the credits in this opening title sequence, which is basically 2.5 minutes of fire effects and random music, so we can see the names of all the people that worked on Spawn. And occasional imagery that evokes.
It looks like
whatever.
Credits for like a CD-ROM game, like the font.
Yes.
Like the seventh guest here.
This feels like the demo reel for a director auditioning to be a special effects supervisor on Spawn.
Right.
Yeah. And when we do eventually go to hell, it will look like the final battle in like Quake or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. John Leguizamo, first billing, by the way, in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
We will see.
He was
more
the
of
Marlon Brando of Spawn.
We will see more of him soon.
I mean, jokes aside, he really was. I mean, he was sort of the closest thing this film had to a high profile git.
Yeah, at the time, Leguizamo.
It was the West Wing Martin Sheen, right? So,
Nico
Hughes was.
Nico Hughes was at he was at the top of his childhood fame right here. This and like what Mercury Rising were like his last big hits.
Regular on Full House, Wes
Craven's New
Nightmare,
Nightmare. Yeah.
Pet Sematary. He was all over the place. Mm-hmm. They must be together. All right.
Yeah, Graham Revell, classic 90s scorer right there.
This movie had like a pretty popular soundtrack, right?
Oh, I imagine so.
It was like the with what the Crow did for like alternative music. This was like the metal. Electronic or techno metal,
yeah. Oh, yeah,
because I had like Filter on it, Manson.
Look at all these credits that I cannot read. Like,
that's because they don't want you to know who they are.
That's what I was saying that out loud to myself. I was like, wow, they just don't want me to know these people, apparently, because I can't get a straight face on this.
Stop moving. I want to read you.
No,
random lightning. There's some imagery from like Dante's Inferno.
That's not Guillermo del Toro, don't worry.
Guillermo
del
his regular cinematographer.
Spawn was a very popular comic.
At the time, yes, for sure.
I didn't read Spawn. Like, I don't know, it didn't appeal to me. Like, a lot of the image stuff really, like, I think it's cool with those guys, you know, those guys doing it on their own stuff, but I never got into, like, Wildstorm or anything else. Like, I was more into, like, the Todd McFarlane, like, toy line. Mm-hmm. That came out than the Image Comics.
That's the worst one, the produced by credit. Like, I cannot, for the life of me, get a read on what that was supposed to be.
And directed by Marcus DP.
Who's gone on to direct not a lot. Certainly not a lot. Major theatrical films.
I think it's forgotten how big, like, Todd McFarlane was at this time.
He was a big icon as far as, like, comics
like
go.
His name was on anything. It was like, oh, quality. And then this movie came.
Yeah, because, like, what... what's like the 90s comic scene like? I mean, it's...
He had the most popular issue of like Spider-Man ever at the time. And him and... I'm going to go for Jim Lee. There was another guy, the Deadpool creator. What's his name?
Yeah, Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld. They all like they were getting screwed over by Marvel, and so they just like walked out and formed Image Comics.
Which has gone on to produce The Walking Dead is currently like the biggest Image comic right now. But
Spawn was the big their first comic, and it was huge because it was McFarlane, and then like Wildstorm, and like a ton of their other comics and. Spawn was just like everywhere. He was like this badass.
Because it was different, right? I mean, you have like we talk about this before on other movie commentaries that we've done, but like we talk about the, you know, the Batman stuff and like Watchmen thing, you know, the kind of that dark 80s aesthetic that really kind of took over in the late 80s, which led into kind of the 90s where the comics didn't necessarily soften up, but they certainly, you know, the cartoon series started to take off, and that made it a lot more family friendly again. Not a bad thing, not anything necessarily, but it. You know, the kind of the movement is of comics at that time.
Everything in the 90s was all like the 90s was all about making the new this. So these were like new superheroes. I mean, like even down to like if you look at like for example something way off.
There's
like,
one of our wipes, by the way, right there. There's a lot of creative flame and cape wipes in this movie,
right? Like the NBA at the time was all like, oh, new jerseys, like making it as like. As far away from what things used to be as they were, and like there'd be like the new, you know, they were bringing television shows to making them the new version of this, new movies. There was a new Fugitive TV show, new, you know, Fugitive movie, even
lots of new. Yeah,
instead of remaking, it was like new this or, but, and Spawn was like the face of all that, and this, I mean
it's very evocative imagery for. I mean, it's a Todd McFarlane comic. It already has a kind of a style of its own. But the idea, I mean, there is, you know, there's a religious aspect to it, much in the same way that Daredevil has a religion, which he's talked about before also.
Spawn appealed to, like, the Punisher crowd, the Mobius crowd, like, Lobo. Like, all that stuff was, like, what this is appealing to.
So getting back to this movie, we have D.B. Sweeney and Al Simmons himself, Michael Jai White. We haven't mentioned yet, but this is technically the first black superhero movie based off a comic.
It is the first, I believe.
We have Blank Man, but that's not based off a comic.
Yes.
Right.
Hello?
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
Carry on.
We have this, Steel and Blade, right?
Yeah. This came out 2 weeks before Steel.
To set the tone for the era.
Or Shaq.
Not counting, I guess, Men in Black, but that's not a superhero.
Yes.
So. And it's a pretty obscure property.
I want to say 3-4 weeks before this, give or take.
That's a pretty big summer, I guess, for like black-led comic movies.
Yeah. And nobody made it, like Scott had been saying, nobody, I mean, nowadays, like, hey, look, we have a black superhero movie. Hey, look what we're doing. And this was just like, hey, here it is.
Oh, they were cheaper. There was less at stake. And you didn't need, you know, there was a perception that you needed overseas money.
Well, I think there's I was reading, like, D.B. Sweeney's character in the comics was black.
Yes.
But they gender-bended him to, or race-bended him to show that they weren't just, like, making a black person movie.
That's what I've heard, yes. Which, of course, today would, you know, cause a firestorm.
I mean, the fact is, though, D.B. Sweeney's character, Terry, he is a black character in the comics, and they did change it, and, you know, it's not like they were, you know, beyond knowing that. This scene is amazing, by the way, because Martin Sheen's, like, giving all this exposition about what's going on, while Melinda Clark is, like, holding a tarantula, and there's, like, an ashtray full of scorpions, and, like, really weird stuff for, like, this man's office.
Right.
Also, Martin Sheen, all of his dialogue is so... the way he delivers everything is, like, the most gruffest possible way he could deliver any line of dialogue.
Well, he's in, like... As soon... It becomes more apparent to me, but after the... When we flash forward 5 years to him, he looks like... It kind of acts like a darkest timeline Wayne Newton.
Yeah.
Like, he's got his voice going, his, like, that beard and his hair...
Yeah. We talked over the introduction of Clown, kind of the introduction of Clown, by the way. We just got a shadowy, very large person with crazy hair voiced by John Leguizamo, but we essentially got our introduction of Clown.
And, you know, how exactly did the two of them come into business together?
You know, as much as I don't need a bunch of exposition, to explain how this movie's set up, that's a scene I would like. I want to know at what point this happened.
I mean, you have Wynn, Smart Machine, who's basically a, you know, normal human, you know, mercenary, whatever the hell he is. But apparently he's doing business with one of Hal's disciples. It seems redundant, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
There's a neck break that was not in the theatrical version.
If this movie was better, it'd be a really great look at efficiency when it comes to making something like this.
Yeah.
Because it does get to the point pretty quickly.
Right.
It's like there's a bad guy who heads a big company. There's some kind of hellspawn that he works for, and he's using his number one assassin to get some kind of deal going.
And the hero, you know,
he's a morally corrupt,
good at
hero.
His job. He's got a family and a partner, and there you go.
I like Martin Sheen's costume here.
Yes.
He shows up in person.
He's wearing like a flame retardant jumpsuit, I guess. It has a little meter on the side of it, so I guess that's probably important. I don't know what it gauges exactly, but it's there. She could have used the stairs, but who cares, right? She jumps over a railing for some reason. Breaks an ankle.
Yeah, and it's funny, Melinda Clark's character is changed from this, as it was supposed to be somebody who was in the...
an actual character that exists.
Wildstorm.
Yeah.
And nowadays, they would jump at the chance to cross stuff over.
Yeah.
Yeah, they created a character for the film for her to play, as opposed to... using anybody that could have fit for this role. It's weird those choices that get made in these kind of things.
Yeah, in this movie, we're about to see, like, we just had an instant. Within the first 20 minutes goes flashback crazy.
Uh-huh.
Like I didn't forget this.
There's a lot of this that's similar to... Not quite, but like similar to Darkman in a way of like how it tries to.
Oh, yeah, I did get a Darkman vibe.
But that movie is way more, I don't know, economical and, you know, good in what it's trying to do.
Well, it's got that gothic, like universal monster vibe in a lot of it. It's like photography and makeup and the way it portrays a character and his surrounding people. And I was thinking it was interesting because it's like a very Batman, Darkman thing going on. And I can't remember if like the shadow carried that at all as well.
It does. It's a little more kind of gee whiz because of the time setting and the kind of pulp attitude of it. But I mean,
it's funny because like who'd have thought the Universal Monsters would inspire the comic book?
Well, if anything, this is an interesting kind of break away from the retro period of superhero movies, where besides the Batman series, which kind of just started with that and then let that get away when Schumacher got involved, regardless of how good or bad we might think those movies are, you know, you had the Phantom and the Shadow and Dick Tracy that all fit a certain kind of mold. This is much like, you know, Spawn, the comic series. This is a lot different from what we were seeing.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. New Line Cinema was really the only one that responded to Batman by doing modern day adaptations of comics that people actually knew, kids actually cared about. And, you know, if you argue, as I often have, that, you know, movies like this and arguably more so Blade were the ones that sort of kickstarted the second wave, then really it's you know, New Line gets all the credit for why we have the modern comic book movie.
Toby Emmerich.
Give or take The Crow. I mean, I think that was, it started at Paramount and ended up, I think, at Miramax.
Yeah, but that was also like, what, 94, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's mid into this, okay.
And like the next Spawn movie, we should be getting that Crow any day now.
I can barely remember a time in my life when they weren't about to remake The Crow.
What made more money, Blade or Spawn? I'd imagine Blade, right?
This is about equal.
Because, yeah,
believe it or not,
Spawn did surprisingly.
Yeah, no, it did pretty well.
I
could have sworn this was a box office flop, but it did pretty well.
It opened at 19 million. It did about 54-ish when it was done.
Uh-huh.
Blade opened at 17 the next summer, almost a year of the day, give or take, and did about 54, 55, whatever.
I guess just Wesley Snipes is a more kind of bankable.
I'm sorry, no, that one did 70.
Okay, all right.
I apologize.
And the movie also got good. It got good reviews.
Well, it was good.
That helped. Yeah.
Well, a lot of Spawn lived on through. He had an HBO series and has
his
series.
Good. That's a series to get behind as far.
Which was the worst possible thing to air before this movie came out, because it's 10 billion times better.
Well, that's what McFarlane wanted to do. Like he wanted to. If he told studios, they're like, well, if you had full creative control of Spawn, what would you do? He's like, I would do a fully animated, R-rated movie that would be like nothing that I've ever seen here, that would probably flop in this country because they wouldn't be ready for it, but could, you know, break ground and be the next big thing. And that was what he ended up doing after this movie with this stuff.
It's annoying that it's interesting that there's not an animated Spawn movie that's come out so far. Like there've been things, I believe, but not like a defining Spawn movie in animated form. I'm surprised by that at this point, given how many other things that we've seen, Spawn related, and how the characters withstood the test of time and what have you, as far as popularity goes. It seems like such a complicated movie to try to keep making, regardless of how much McFarlane keeps wanting to talk about it. But I'd imagine some kind of animation studio would be happy to pick this up.
Right.
Maybe it's a rights thing.
Yeah, that's McFarlane thing. He likes to have control, I guess.
That has to be part of it, I imagine.
And he doesn't seem like a easy person to deal with.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who. I mean, I don't know, like stars. They could pick up some animated thing.
Right.
Because the show is good. I mean, I think the animation style is a bit dated. It's done by a lot of this. It shares a lot of qualities of King of the Hill, of all things, as far as animation goes. Kind of the look of that show. And you can imagine a series like Spawn in the world of King of the Hill. not the greatest animation quality. And I love King of the Hill, by the way.
Bobby.
There's a helicopter. Whatever that was. That digital effect there. And then we just wipe away. We've skipped over this entire, like, Al Simmons was kind of killed, and then we get this giant leap forward where we, much like him, has no idea what the hell's going on, but there is...
And then we have to be told that it's 5 years later.
Yeah. There's a lot of narration, like, making sure we're somewhat aware of what's happening here.
Yeah, it's a sloppily put together movie that feels like, even in the, like, director's cut, feels like chopped up like crazy.
We need to talk about the universe that the normal characters occupy and how regular they feel things are here. Because hired John Leguizamo's clown character, who's disguised himself
as a clown.
Like, the most horrendous, like, it's like short of Pennywise. Like, I don't know what's a creepier clown that could be, like, at a children's birthday party. With the teeth and what he's saying to these kids, where apparently...
What's he say? He says something really... I was like, holy crap, what?
Yeah, no parents paying attention to this person whatsoever, apparently.
In case you forgot,
Michael Jai White and Teresa Randall were, engaged, which we learned, minutes earlier, but the movie made sure to give us flashbacks to that. Also, what does Teresa Randall do? She's done, like, Bad Boy movies, Girl 6, and this.
Basically, yeah. That's...
Like, good on her for not being one that, being like Tara Reid with Big Lebowski 2 for spreading rumors that Bad Boys 3 is coming any day now, but... I was curious, like, where did she go? Like, because he was in the...
More Six than your local hit hooker, that was it.
That's kind of what, yeah. But she was in, she's...
She was in Space Jam the year before.
Yeah. Maybe she just, had a family or got another job or something, I don't know.
Yeah, this was, she didn't do much after that.
She came back for Bad Boys 2. Like, that's it, as far as, my TV stuff here or there or without, but nothing.
Kind of like Children Fried.
Yeah. More of these, John Leguizamo, by the way, he does commit. He's going full Leguizamo with his role.
He is the physical embodiment of Dan Aykroyd's Nothing But Trouble.
Like, if he was annoyed by wearing this costume, you couldn't tell given the exuberance that he brings to the role of clown or the violator.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's such a weird effect, too, because, like, I know, Leguizamo's not a tall person, but he looks like he's decidedly shorter, just given how crazy this costuming is. Like, he's it's not that short. Like, but, like, just the way he looks and everything, like, there's some clever camera work or something, because it just, he just looks so, like, his stature seems so shortened.
Unless he's walking on
his knees.
Is
her name actually Lolita? Or did he just pull a Lolita reference on a you know, 5-year-old child?
She pulled, yeah, her name's, like, Cyan or something like that. Yeah,
I assume he got paid in advance.
Yeah. I guess. But he might be a huge Spawn fan. I mean, if you're gonna, it's one thing to be like D.B. Sweeney, but if you're gonna be Clown, I mean, that takes a level of dedication. It's like he's not just like Wazombo; he's unrecognizable. Besides the first billing in the credits.
Now this is a movie that.
Oh, I get. Okay, I'm remembering now. Okay. Okay.
It's a movie with the least amount of storytelling humanly possible between the set pieces or the special effects sequences.
Which I think is why as a child...
why it feels so stitched.
Which is why as a younger child, I think I was kind of into the movie because it just flowed well enough where I could put it on a lot. Not saying that I didn't love this movie, but I did have it on VHS, and I remember watching it quite a bit just because I think it just moved. I was probably playing with toys or something while it was on or what have you, but still...
This is kind of a one and done for me. Like, I didn't see it in the theater because, you know, a lot of people told me it was crappy. I rented it and I was like, well, okay. I think I maybe would like catch it on like a movie channel or something, but not like watch the whole thing. But I was just, I don't know.
I think I saw this twice. I think I saw this once with my mom and then once like with like random friends.
I saw it Thursday night, the advanced night screening. Hated it. But then, because the VHS version was R-rated, I was curious, so I rented it and watched it again. And it's like, oh, okay, you know, it still sucks. Barbie still stinks. But, okay, it's clear that, you know, the R-rated version was more, you know, what it was supposed to be. I mean, the PG-13 version is, you know, you can tell where they cut away from violence. You can tell where they make changes, yada, yada, yada. And even not knowing that the R-rated version exists, it still felt like a movie that was cut and trimmed and altered to get that PG-13. And, you know, coming after Batman and Robin, and, yeah, you know, right before Steel, frankly, you know, this was not a good time for comic book superhero movies. You know, this was a dark era. You know, as Harvey Dent says, dark is before the dawn, and, you know, we were a year away from Blade. And which would be our salvation. We just saw this scene.
Yep, but we got it again.
No,
and again, that's a sign of a movie that's been, you know, barely stitched together. Is that, you know, this is a 90-minute movie plus credits, and I would guess probably 5-10 minutes are flashbacks.
Within the first 20. Okay, so it's Michael Jai White's that guy. Okay. I got it.
Now it's Dr. Claw as the devil.
Oh, these.
Here we go. These hell scenes are amazing. The character here, the devil, who I guess is, what's the name? Like the Malebolgia, as they refer to it here. The mouth on this thing that does not move, but it still speaks, is amazing to me. And here are all the other, I guess, spawns of his army. These are 1997 CG effects that Roger Ebert felt good enough to award 3.5 stars to the film.
Right. And he called it what? Spawn is unforgettable?
Yeah.
It's like, what?
It's not false. I mean, you know, I think we were still in, you know, this was, you know, right around the CGI, whatever, where it was still possible to, oh, I've never seen that on screen before. I'm impressed that this imagery, even if it's not terribly well rendered, is still presented to me on the silver screen.
This is the same.
And this certainly was different than a conventional comic book movie of its era. And if you have someone like, you know, frankly, Roger Ebert, who never presented himself as much of a comics nerd, this probably was something very different to him. Like, you know, for him, the novelty was enough. I don't want to put words into his mouth, but
they also, I think they there was a timing issue with this, and they had to lease out, they had to like send out a lot of the effects to a different effects house that wasn't very good.
Well, it's a mix of that, and like the guys working on this were like former ILM employees, so they're and they're really rushing to get all this stuff done like weeks before the movie came out. But this movie came out the same year as The Relic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Which, that's my key example when it comes to seeing that the switchover happened, because it has some great practical effects and some horrifically awful visual CG effects.
Yeah. That is a bare-bones gravestone.
Yeah, yeah, there's, no, there's no dates on it or anything. Nope. just says he died a patriot, Al Simmons. that's it.
Technically, he didn't.
No, he died in some random warehouse as an assassin.
Apparently committing, you know, basically genocide. What in the world is this? Is that Alice Cooper?
Oh, you wish. No, it looks like members of Smash Mouth.
Yeah.
This is like the rejected cast from the Terminator at the beginning.
Right. He's got to have that flannel wrapped around his waist.
Here's a fun fact. Wesley Snipes, Cuba Gooding, Snoop Dogg, Alan Payne, Denzel, Sam Jackson, Ving Rhames, LL Cool J, and Will Smith were all considered for the role of Al Simmons.
So any black actor.
Any black actor, yes.
Right.
Ultra respect.
That people knew their names.
Except,
and you know, to their credit, they went with a relative unknown.
Yeah.
And he basically, you know, he still has a career 15, 20 years later.
I'd say arguably he had to forge a career.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, who's to say he would have even gotten that start without this movie?
That's a way to look at it.
But
I can't imagine how difficult this must have been, by the way, to have all of this prosthetic stuff on. This is like contacts and everything. But what do I know? John Leguizamo's clown, so who cares? Oh, there we go. We got a scream into the camera shot. That's nice. There's no structure to this movie, but like we're earning stuff that we like, I guess, glossed over five minutes into the movie.
Right.
So and these are guys who are basically so clown or whatever can kill somebody and we don't feel bad.
And I don't get a lot of what Spawn's powers exactly are.
Well,
I just know he's got a cool mask, but they never let him wear it in this movie.
Because you have to see his face, which is covered in makeup.
Yes.
I'm not sure why the mask was more difficult to keep on than just having his makeup face.
It's not like he's like one of those actors that's like, oh, you have to see my face. His face is still covered in stuff.
It's not like Judge Dredd. Like, you know, it's like you want to see Stallone, of course. Like, it's not that. Right. It's like he's already, he's like a burnt up ugly thing. At least the mask is kind of an iconic aspect of Spawn.
He's almost like a Hellraiser Cenobite, the way his like powers work and stuff with the chains and.
Well, like, I think it's more of me, you know, piecing together things based off just being, you know, smart, but I mean, his ideally you'd get a sense that this man is, you know, gone through hell literally and is kind of tortured with all kinds of feelings that he doesn't understand, which Clown basically explains, and it's manifesting itself into weird defenses that form this elaborate bodysuit. Now,
yet he still needs to go get guns.
He doesn't understand his powers. Eventually, he doesn't need those guns, as we'll come to learn. But do you like this suit? Like the way it looks?
When it is fully formed and you see the mask, yes, it is exciting to see that. Like, oh, wow, it's Spawn in live action. Neat.
It's accurate. It's really accurate.
It's accurate, but I feel like it's a texture thing, I guess, where every time I look at the suit, it just feels so meaty. Like, it feels so, I mean, it's organic, which I guess is true to what it's supposed to be, but, you know, on the page, you don't really see that so much. You see, you know, straight black. You don't see the different, like, layers of the black. So it works on the page. I'm not saying it doesn't work here, it's just it feels such like an interesting depiction of what that comic book would look like if you made it into reality. And here it is in this fully formed version it's not a neoprene suit. It's not streamlined in any way. It's not, you know, it's not spandex. It's just this. It's like muscle in like a really awkward kind of way. Which, like you're saying, it's visually exciting to see that happen, but it's like, ugh. it's like I wouldn't want to touch this person.
Well,
especially because of the chains and spikes and all that. That doesn't help either. Here's where John Leguizamo ate real maggots, making me question again. Is he just a huge Spawn fan?
He was method.
I mean, he's eating real maggots. Like, like if there's no cutaway, like you're watching him eat real maggots on pizza.
And he goes to spit it the hell out right there.
I'd assume so, but still, it's not like he fear factored up on that one.
Jump kick.
Just Spawn kicks a wall really hard.
It's my favorite action scene.
I like all the Green Lantern green in this scene of him forming things of his mind. Oh, speaking of which.
Hi. I've been narrating a couple scenes.
I'm the narrator.
I like to think that the green mist stuff is once again leftover Titanic breath that James Cameron wasn't using that they just made green.
You alone will face the Violator.
There is, I mean, as silly as and bad as some of this movie is, I do like some of the banter. Like, there are moments that work in this. And especially, I mean, John Leguizamo, I mean, we're talking about him.
I love this.
He just delivers some good lines.
I love that he just pulls out the sword for no reason. It's like, yep, he has that. And scene.
It needed. How else are we going to transition to another scene, Brandon, if we don't see an elaborate shine from his sword thing?
Yeah, I was just like, wait, what? Is he going to go attack him? Is he going to show some power? No. Oh, it's just the end of the scene.
I mean, it's either that or Star Wipes. That's all I'm saying.
The ones when later on when Martin Sheen's like in a hospital bed and they keep using the same. Oh, hilarious. Keep using the same one.
Is there any commentary in this movie, like, as far as, like, what it's thematically trying to do? I've been trying to piece that together. I was watching it last night. I was like, what? Is it trying to say
anything? There he is! It's Darkest Timeline Wayne Newton.
There he is. Yeah.
Darkest Timeline Martin Sheen.
You know, the news makes me feel like that this could, like, take place in the same world as Johnny Mnemonic.
What's his character in The Dead Zone?
Stilson.
Stilson. Yeah, Stilson. You know, it's Stilson. Like, he's out of politics, and he's become a corrupt businessman. Well, he's become a businessman. Here I go again. I got another story. Ha! Cigars.
Unfortunately, this movie's not really a
mini disc.
Yeah, there's a lot of mini discs in this movie. Yeah, there's no. Yeah, there's nothing, right, Scott?
No. You know, and I.
We got Heat 16 here. Here's a huge MacGuffin for the movie.
And you know, it's and this is something that I might write about next month. One of the reasons I wanted to watch this is that, you know, you did have a spate of smaller budget superhero movies with black people that actually were a bit more politically incisive. They were about things.
Is this considered smaller budget? Is $40
million? This is probably higher end.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I was thinking more stuff like Blank Man and Meteor Man and even Steel to a certain extent.
Oh, those seem like low budget.
I don't know.
Steel feels like $5. Like, I think Shaq's NBA salary costs more than Steel's budget.
That and the soundtrack, probably. I do like the cape. That's
yes.
Like, every time the cape is on. Yes, exactly, because it's probably expensive and complicated. But every time I see the cape on screen, that's the best I find the represent. Like, there's a key scene where he, like, escapes the police for the first time, and you see him perched on the building in one of those comic book splash page shots. That's, like, a key, like, yeah, okay, this movie got that right.
Who you talking to?
He just speaks out loud like that, you know. Let's get reacquainted. He's talking.
So every time we introduce a weapon, we wipe out to
flames, flame wipe.
Something flame wipe, flame wipe. Sweeney was in on it the whole time.
Sweeney's trying to find the truth.
That's right.
But can he handle the truth?
He can handle that tux.
All that Darkest Timeline facial hair going on.
Yeah. Edward Norton was apparently auditioning for this role, but he dropped out for Rounders.
Good call.
Yep.
Yeah.
Although he could have demanded a lot of changes, maybe made a better movie.
He would have directed it. Edward Norton Spawn.
The Norton cut on Blu-ray. Alex Proyas was going to direct this, but he made Dark City instead.
Good choice.
Thank you.
Oh, God.
But, man, it's nice to hear about those old rivals, Edward Norton and D.B. Sweeney.
Yeah, the People versus D.B. Sweeney was a good one.
You know, it's funny, he's uttering random tough guy whatever, but they're not actually talking about anything specific.
Nope. It's a lot of posturing.
It's again, that's just bad writing.
Well, and Martin Sheen's performance in this movie is something you don't get anymore, because he's like a guy thinking, oh, I'm in a comic book movie, so I gotta, ramp up my evil, be a little bit crazy rather than just acting the part.
But it's 90s good, so you have like Treat Williams in The Phantom.
Oh, Treat Williams is awesome.
He is awesome in The Phantom.
He's on six different levels of awesome.
But that's like the high end, or you have his name, who just passed away from Darkman, Durant.
Robert Drake.
Robert Drake.
Blake, is that right?
No, that's Robert Blake. Blake. Robert Drake. Blake. Robert Drake. Drake. You got it. Yeah.
Drake.
Okay. and that was, at the time, that was very, obviously it was a very against type casting, because he was known as, on L.A. Law, as the mentally deficient office assistant, basically, if I recall. Which at the time, he was a groundbreaking character. He was, mentally, he had...
Larry Drake, sorry.
Yeah, Larry Drake. So this was very much, basically, I'm not that character. That is an interesting transition.
Cape transition.
This is that classic 90s superhero, charity ball fundraiser, superhero crashes the event, bad
I don't
guy.
I think that's over. I think that still happens.
Well, they did that in The Dark Knight.
They do it in The Dark Knight. Yeah, The Dark Knight Rises. And Batman Returns. And pretty much, I think every Batman movie actually has as a
You know what? You know what happens when they fade scenes, Aaron?
Yep.
The fire rises.
The fire rises. Oh, so dark in the cotton man. Let's see, a lot of random unnamed countries. That's good.
Mr. Wynn, who maybe he's also the same Wynn from Halloween 6 that was involved in.
You don't say.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe this is the further adventures.
I don't know what D.B. Sweeney's job is in this movie. Like, I thought he was Al Simmons' partner, yet he never goes in the field, apparently. And now he's like just some random like tech guy or something, but he's trying to find out the scoop on all these missions that he shouldn't have any ideas about anyway. Like, I don't know what he does for this company.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Takes care of Al Simmons' wife. His wife, right? Or is she fiance?
They're married. They're married now.
They're married. Okay.
You weren't paying attention during those flashbacks.
That's right.
No flashback to that again.
There we go. See, and now he immediately takes the mask off.
Okay. Yep.
Oh, and I was trying. Yeah, here we go again with the reality of the scene. People are, I guess they're kind of shocked, but it's like a dude just flew in with like a cape. And just magically inserted that inside of himself. And everyone's just kind of like, I guess we'll back up a little bit. Like, that's the response to this.
You could put a hockey mask on him. He'd be perfect for Friday the 13th for like the reveal.
Yeah.
When they take the mask off.
That's all he does is throw him against the team.
He throws him.
He could have snapped his neck and been done.
Look at those superpowers.
He wants to make him suffer, Scott. And that involves kicking and pulling people. Where are these guns? Are they on him?
I think they're inside him, like the key.
He doesn't know.
Well, he's loaded. He's got ammo.
He's got bandoliers up the yin yang, but like, where are these guns that he has? Oh, I guess he has one. Okay. Does he just have the one? What does that ammo go to? Melinda Clark is unfazed by the presence of this
Melinda
person.
Clark is shooting innocent bystanders.
She's just shooting everyone.
Yes.
That is going to send their stocks plummeting. Again, that was not in the PG-13 version.
Knocking over the waiter's like, no, you don't want to go back in there.
He's T-1000-ing. And the movie, like, it tries to have fun because it gives, like, Michael Jai White these lines where he's like, damn, I'm amazing. Look how cool that was, like, as he realizes his powers.
Special effects, guys. Wow.
I guess I can kind of appreciate that this movie mercilessly kills the main female villain right away.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any buts about it. That said, she's established as, you know, a horrible person. And, you know, the one that killed our hero. Or at least shot him in the legs a bunch of times.
And she smokes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, smoking's evil, as we established in Hong Kong. That's fun. His belt into a protect the balls from getting kicked move.
So Spawn's superpowers, he just, like, throws people against things.
That's pretty much all they can afford.
Well, he has chains and a cape, but who needs those, right, when you can throw people around?
He's not good at keeping his secret identity, because that damn mask needs to go every time he...
She was awfully easy to kill.
I mean, she's
good thing he had superpowers, or he wouldn't have been able to shoot those guns.
He's only human. Shot her right in the head.
Jeez.
Which, again, is a change because, you know, you don't see the bullets go into her head. You see them more conventionally around the stomach area in a non-bloody way. Then you cut and there's a headshot. So I assume in the original, in an original version, there was a headshot. And this is all added from the theatrical cut, all this gunplay.
Oh, he did a flip where he just shoots everything. Classic Spawn.
Again, you know, you don't kill people at your own party. That's bad for business.
This stuff kind of looks good.
Nipple clamps.
Yeah. It kind of looks good, though, in, like, falling out of the building. Like, it looks well done.
It's dark. That helps.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's only... I mean, I don't know what brightness would help as far as, you know, seeing a person fall out of a window. Like, it does its job.
Well, I'm just,
I hear you, yeah.
Now, I have a question here. Does, like, because he camouflages himself by looking like an extra section of the building. Yeah. Is that, like, on a timer?
Well, the idea is that he's not controlling his power because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing yet. So it's just his body's naturally reacting to defend itself. But if it's disturbed in some way, it's going to wear off to a point.
Okay, because I was just like, why didn't he just stay there until they just give up and go home?
Well, you'll see. I mean, they're not just going to leave right away. He's just
there
staying
he goes.
Still.
He's the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Spawn. He's just, you know, he's dead already and stuff. He can just wait. He's no hurry.
I mean, you know, you want to think like, okay, they're not looking here anymore. Maybe I can go away now. Because he does once the lights are, like, somewhere else, he tries to get out, and then he just knocks over this piece of the building. One of those classic corners of a building like that, it falls off easily.
Crumbling infrastructure.
I mean, yes, the movie doesn't confuse me as far as him trying to learn what he's capable of doing. Like Throwing people in shooting
guns.
But I get the narrative, like, the visual language of, like, how his powers work thus far.
I get that, like, his stuff just... He's kind of have, like, these little mechanisms that happen to defend himself that just automatically work, but...
There's the shot right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's a cool shot. Like, it looks great. It's very evocative. You have the dark Catholic image going on in the background.
It was cool at the end of Tim Burton's Batman, too.
There's no signal. The Spawn signal. It's just a green
cape's covering it.
But I like that the cape's, like, it's amorphous. Like, it's not just like a standard cape. It's different.
No, it's very cool.
And it's red and it's tattered. Like, it's something that, and it, you know, it's like this weird, just shapeless thing that extends out of him and helps him fly around in weird ways.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm watching is, and they probably, you know, it's probably money thing, but I wish there was more him with the mask and more cape.
Yeah. Look at how angry Martin Sheen is acting.
You know, he's not much taller than Leguizamo as that guy.
I guess, like, he has to be, maybe he's on his knees, Brandon, maybe you're right about that, but it's like something, but it's just, And just the, I mean, God, the bodysuit and stuff. That's just so
yeah, strange. it looks natural.
It's distracting to just think about the process of Leguizamo suiting up for this thing, and those teeth.
Oh yeah.
This gave Danny DeVito a run for his money. In real life and as the Penguin. Also, Martin Sheen just agreed to very complicated heart surgery to put a bomb inside of himself.
Yes!
He just said, yeah, that sounds good. I want to do that. I'm all about that.
I want that hell on earth. I want it now.
Plenty of in-jokes, by the way, as far as Apocalypse Now goes, where Clown is constantly mentioning Apocalypse, and Martin Sheen's about to have a pacemaker attached to him, given his well-known heart problems from Apocalypse Now. he really wanted to play up those jokes against his heart condition. There it is. Good idea. I like that. Let's put a giant bomb inside of me. But this whole bomb thing, or like the whole, like, if his heart stops, dangerous gas released all over the world. That's what, like, I was severely confused by that as a child watching this movie. I could never quite, because of how stupid it is, I could never quite grasp the concept of, like, wait, you want to put a thing inside you so if you die, gas is released everywhere, but no one knows this, so they could kill you without knowing this would happen. But you just assume that everyone would? Did you release, like, a wind press release? Like, I have a pacemaker that if I die, the gas is released, or what have you?
If he dies in surgery, does it still happen?
It don't get me started on how Spawn disposes of the said device. Like,
yes! Oh, it's done.
Spawn has casually walked into, like, a professional business meeting in his, like, homeless man clothes.
Yeah.
It's very comic booky, I guess. Like, it's
limited
in its way to feel very, you know, confined to very certain characters and locations and what have you.
That's the thing with the ones from back in the 90s, and I think some of DC comic books' problem now is that they're just, like, maybe straight lifting things from page to screen when they're not realizing you have to adapt it into a film kind of form or not mixing the mediums correctly.
Yeah.
Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad, you can't say that they're not, like, I mean, I'd say they're more page to screen comic book movies than the Marvel ones, and that's not a good thing necessarily. Because the whole, like, Doomsday fight at the end of Batman v Superman, that's, like, on a comic book page and stuff, that could be, all that stuff, messy as it was in a film, could work much better there on a page than it does translating into a film.
I'm sorry, I got distracted by Clown in a cheerleader outfit making a Spawn theme all of a sudden before getting transferred back to my favorite location in this movie, hell. Just the hairs on this devil face.
Pupils are minus signs.
I'm glad that they keep inserting random bits of lightning in the background to make sure you know that there's dimension to this place.
What's your time code right now?
50 minutes?
Okay, mine froze for a second. I'm going to get back.
The devil's holding Clown by his leather jacket. Yeah.
Cartoon devil.
The mouth doesn't move, but he's talking. Was this a hard thing to pull off? Like,
and I met this before. I love that, you know, you cast Frank Welker, fine, one of the most prolific voice actors, you know, ever, but you have him do his Dr. Claw voice. So you have Satan, who is the voice of Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Are you sure they didn't just lift lines from Dr. Claw and edit them together to make him sound like
I'll get you next time, Simmons. Next time.
They wanted to cheap out on Frank Welker. Maybe the original actor was just not good enough, so they just did way went that route. You know, we mentioned Blank Man, and that was even an idea that we had for a commentary for this month. That movie, I believe there's some relevance in that movie compared to today.
Quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, it's about relative hopelessness in the inner city, you know, a person representing you know, a very slight amount of hope, and the forces in power that would rather keep the status quo. I mean, there's some horrible, I mean, it's not unless PG-13, but there's some horrible violence in that film.
There's a pretty, because as I recall, Damon Wayans is like, his mother gets killed or something.
His grandmother.
His grandmother, and there's a whole sequence involving, like, a mayor who's going to be blown up, and he actually is, like,
yes.
blown up, and there's like there's a tearful confession from Blank Man to the mayor, where he's like, my grandmother lived here, and, you know, say something to her in heaven. He's like, I will, and then he has to, like, sadly run out of a bank before it explodes.
Yeah.
The mayor is chained to a safe. It's like...
It's
and then David Alec Greer like falls down or something to make
sense. It doesn't make it a good movie. But again, that's why I want to watch them and possibly write about this, you know, when Luke Cage debuts next month, because, like, you know, we've been here before where you had, you know, frankly, black superhero movies that were very timely and, you know, specific in their topicality and politics.
It's the guy that became $150 million. It's the guy that killed the Waynes. Give me a second.
It's who?
Is he the guy that killed? No, that's not the. No, who's the, who's he? He's another thing in Batman, though, isn't he? Hold on, what am I thinking?
I don't know.
No, it's another guy that killed the Waynes, but that guy.
Oh, Joe Chill.
Joe Chill, but there's that guy's from something too. Also, Spawn's about to, like, murder this person because he hit his kid.
Why'd you give the kid a piece of chicken?
Or no, he murdered Uncle Ben. He's in Spider-Man. That's what
That's right.
I'm just like, he murdered somebody's parents. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
but not Martin Sheen, Uncle Ben.
Not Martin Sheen.
That guy murdered himself.
Yeah, Cliff Robertson, Uncle Ben. Yeah, man, Michael Sheen murdered himself with the Amazing Spider-Man.
He did. Him and those chompers, man.
Yeah, I knew he murdered somebody in the comic book movie. Yeah, he's the guy that killed Uncle Ben, and then Spider-Man like beat up a lot, and then he killed him. Then he fell out of a building
with Sandman.
Yeah, with Sandman. Sandman actually did the deed. As we willingly accept. But Papa John, he drove the getaway vehicle.
It wasn't like that.
I didn't want it to go happen this way.
I heard a man died.
I heard you killed a man. It wasn't like that.
To be fair, Thomas Hayden.
I forgive you.
He gives his all in that performance. And I
It's a solid
move.
That movie's got a lot of like great acting and like scenes and performances that aren't earned, but those performances earn what the result, you know. Like that scene of the Edward... He's like, I didn't want it to happen this way. Then why were you robbing banks and destroying cities?
Why did you team up with Venom?
And team up with Venom?
Hey, I inspected your father's wounds. It was the glider that killed him, not Spider-Man.
I kept hush. I watched shit hit the fan and continue to keep hitting the fan. And then now I decided, you know what? We're going to Act 3, so I need to tell you this.
Well, there is a deleted scene that further gives motivation for Sandman. It's in the video game. Anyway, back to Miko Hughes and Spawn bonding with their dog Spaz.
Spawn bond. That's
Spawn
good.
Bond. Yeah. That was
the continual fire fade from Martin Sheen in the bed. That perfectly encapsulates his face.
I'm glad we had multiple scenes showing this pacemaker surgery so we can establish that the bomb works.
It's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
And these doctors are in on it. It's like, we did it, guys.
No one would dare kill you.
If this thing goes
unless off. They're so evil they don't care, which would be the kind of person that would kill you.
Or they're completely unaware that you did this surgery.
That too.
Tonight on Medical Heart Implantation.
Like, the movie's silly enough where I would have accepted, like, some kind of, like, spinning newspaper. Win! Extra, extra! Win installs pacemaker in heart. World under threat.
Which also, what's that? Its stock price is plummeting.
Or make them amazing. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I think Clown just dipped worms in mayonnaise and ate them, by the way. Stormy weather going on.
Oh, wait, that guy's in this movie. Forgot.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while.
A lot of stormy weather. Is this supposed to be a town? Is it just supposed to be New York, or is it just whatever?
I don't know.
Spawn City.
I think it's the same city that Seven takes place
Spawn
in.
Spawn City? Oh, Rainy Town, USA. Got it.
Yes. Don't come over here.
Which is L.A., but it rains.
Don't want to see this.
That's why I'm done with you, Somerset. You always get these crazy ideas. I'm glad you're retiring. That's my favorite bit of character exposition in 7. This just right at the beginning. That's the part where even David Fincher's like, I guess we'll get over with this one. Got that thing out of the way. This might have my favorite bit of dialogue where Clown's trying to, like, be intimidating, but then, like, he cuts to the dog. He's like, what the, how can you deal with all this shit going on behind side you? This stuff works for me, by the way. Like, it is, there's, like, a vague menace going on with Leguizamo when he interacts with Spawn to this degree because he's about to turn into the Violator, the big lizard.
Yeah.
Big.
Well, I like that the ultimate villain and Spawn get a ton of scenes together in time.
Yeah.
In the movie. It's interesting. Usually you don't get that till like the end or maybe like one little brief scene in the middle.
Well, it's a different dynamic in that the villain who is presented as the villain right away is almost a quasi mentor to the hero.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, kind of sort of Green Lantern, but again, unless you've read the comic books, Sinestro isn't the bad guy in that film. We'll ignore the post-credit sequence.
You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, he is funny, though. Like, I do genuinely laugh at some of the things he says.
It's almost too much.
It is. Like, there's a lot that is doing too with much. But there's...
Like, yeah, we get it. He's disgusting. Mm-hmm.
But... They're right there, where the dog pees on his foot. He's just like, I don't know how you put up with all this. It's like, as he's, like, trying to be menacing, he has to stop and take, like, a break to, like, mention this dog. And this it is like good comic booky stuff, like right.
Yeah.
As far as like the things going on, the lines they're giving, even just kind of the shortness of the dialogue, like as opposed to Terry and Wynn talking about nothing. Like this is like this stuff pertains to what's happening and fits both characters. Basically, I'm trying to say this like 10-minute stretch of the movie where Spawn and the Violator fight is my favorite part of the movie.
No, yeah, yeah, stuff, yeah.
That and like that cape shot, like that. This is, I think, this is legit good.
Want to see in a Spawn movie?
Yes, yeah, exactly, Scott. It is.
Yeah,
just like you want to see Crow hopping over rooftops in The Crow, which is albeit a much better movie.
Oh yeah, especially
yeah.
I mean, like
comparatively speaking, Jesus.
We talked about that in the commentary, though. Like the stuff that you want to see in a Crow movie is stuff that delivers in that Crow movie, which is chiefly Crow jumping around on rooftops in the rain while goth music plays. Like this stuff in Spawn. Two like forces of varying levels of evil on top of a church in the rain debating how the armies of hell may or may not be released. That's what you want to see in a Spawn movie.
Right.
And as much as we make fun of the special effects, this seems fine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the Violator looks like worlds better.
Yeah.
The transformation scene is fine.
Yeah. And this stuff, there's some practical stuff in there, not much, but there's some in there that works in a movie that's steeped, that, you know, reeks with effects. This movie's like, oh, here we go. The mask finally comes back.
Yeah. Spaz bites Violator.
Use of the necroplasm, which is what they bleed when you're dead. In
the superpower gun firing. Yeah. It's awesome.
Spawn really has a bad time with holding onto the trigger around populated areas, by the way. Even that looks pretty cool. Like, Violator's impaled on this electrical circuit. I guess my issue with the costume is that it feels bulky. Or
usually you get a thin person to be if it's gonna pack on when you put on. But Michael Jai White's a big guy.
It's like I don't look at Michael Jai. That's the thing right there. Michael Jai White is a big guy. But like when I think of Spawn, I don't think of like a muscly person. I think of someone
or sleek, sleek.
Like Deadpool, for example. Deadpool's not. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is in shape for that movie, but like the character design is very. You know, he's thin.
but Ryan Reynolds is like more cut. Like he's not like big and
yes.
Huge. He's more just like he takes a slimmer figure and makes it look more trim. He's not like Ben Affleck as Batman.
Well, Ben Affleck now, but I mean, but his
big. I was like, he looks fat.
But Ben Affleck as Daredevil, also again, very thin design.
Yeah.
But you know, like Wesley Snipes is like he's not bulky as Blade, but you know, he's a bigger guy. But
yeah.
Things like I would never see Denzel in a movie like this, but I could see him like, because that's like Fallen year, like Fallen's 98, but like, you know, he's pretty thin in Fallen.
Like, well, you wouldn't be able to get big stars like D.B. Sweeney to support if you had Denzel in this.
Yeah, he'd be, you know, he's like that Denzel guy, no problem. Ricochet, no problem. Let me get out of here.
Yeah, but, you know, jokes aside, if they were willing to go outside the box, I would have loved to have seen Denzel Washington as Batman in the current continuity. If they were going for an older actor like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've been saying, what's his name? From the Grandmaster. Give me a second. Tony Leung. I think that, like, if you want to go Asian with Batman of all things, I see Tony Leung as a really good Batman. But that's another tale. But yeah, as a veteran actor, yeah, Denzel would be a crazy choice to go with Batman, and like probably one that would really work. There'd be he'd be a lot of attitude, that's for sure. And he's, you know, he'd always have one shoulder to the camera, but you know, I'd like to see it. Who's the Joker? You the Joker? Wait a minute.
Read about you in the funny papers.
And I like how this fight concludes. Like, it's not like a fight to the death necessarily. It's just more of like, we're really angry at each other and we're going to spar. And that's like basically what happened right here. It's like Iron Man 2 where Rhodey and Stark fight. Like, they're not trying to kill each other. They're trying to like settle down. It's like things got to a breaking point. So you have two superhero characters in like a tussle. That said, Spawn's like really pissed off as he's like impaled on the fence right now. And I know this is the R-rated cut, but where he like picks him up off of these spikes, that was in theatrical. I know that.
Yeah.
When we get to that. So it's like, I guess if it's green, it's okay.
The big difference is, well, let me see. I guess I'm wrong. But no, in the theatrical cut, that kid's father does not die.
Does he die in this movie?
I believe so.
Did he die?
I think. Obviously, if I'm wrong.
A lot of people got smashed around. I know that.
Well, like, Todd McFarlane said that one of the things that led to one of their R-rated cuts, one of the notes from the studio, was the fact that they had a scene taking place at night in a cemetery, which isn't alone enough to get an R-rated cut, but that with, like, other strikes that could add up to an R-rated cut that could lead. Just that. It could be, he's like, it could have been two people eating tea, drinking tea and talking about puppies, but the fact that it took place at night in a cemetery was a strike.
Wow.
Yeah.
Downloading secure files.
This is the, yeah, D.B. Sweeney has, he has a touchscreen, which is,
that's hack system.
It's a 1990s touchscreen, which is something, but I mean, yeah, it also narrates every action that he does. Richard Harris was going to be Cogliostro, this green character, but he pulled out.
The Watcher?
Yes. So his hand turns into the sword?
Yeah, like it's not like a slide out thing. Like
it's not
hand turns into some sort of metal.
Oh, he did die.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Not in the theatrical cut.
That's sad, I guess. Although he was gonna like beat his son for spitting out the dirty sandwich. Uncle Ben did have the last laugh. Well, in case you're, you know, hoping that Spawn would get a mentor to train him in how to use his powers, an hour and 5 minutes into the 97-minute movie is, you know, it's about to solve that problem.
Well, I think the thing is he's been hanging around with the wrong guy.
Exactly. He has the wrong influences on his life.
Not that he wanted to be hanging around a Violator, but like...
Well, he did tell off the old man who seemed to be out for nothing but like some kind of advice.
Yeah, Al Simmons totally knew that, which is why he was a contract assassin.
Yeah. He says Wanda a lot in this movie, by the way.
When he blows up at the beginning, it's Wanda!
It suffers from vocabulary word syndrome.
It sticks out because who is named Wanda?
Yeah. And honestly, that's my only issue with the whole Martha scene in Batman v Superman, is they say that name like 8 billion times in a 2-second conversation.
I want to peer into the writing room the day they were doing that, and some guy busted in and was like, I just broke the story, guys. Did you realize their mothers have the same name? Like, and Snyder's like, dude, run with it.
Well, that's what, like, that's... I mean,
or he probably said, bro, run with it.
Not to get all over BVS in our SPOD commentary, but that's what I think the problem with Chris Terrio as a writer was, where he's not a comic book guy, and he's been very public about that, so he latched onto something that he thought seemed revelatory yeah. And yeah. ran with it. And then everybody else ran with it.
I mean, it as a story turn, frankly, it's fine. I mean, it's a good enough a way as any for, you know, the fight to end.
It's the execution of it.
Yeah, the execution is, you know, laughable, frankly.
Yeah, it's too operatic.
Yeah.
Cagliostro, who just used Spawn's chains against him to wrap him up. Is this a miniature that every time that she do a shot of that church thing?
You know what? Probably.
That's the impression I get.
You probably wouldn't see CG normal stuff back then. It was probably just all the big hell sequences of monsters.
It's like an early scene that we talked over where like the clown's like in it and he's kind of like bopping up and down. It just looks so awkward. I'm like, this has to be like a miniature, and they just had like a little puppet there moving back and forth with their hand or something.
Yeah.
That's the thing too, like I can't say, like, it's not like a Paul W.S. Anderson film where at least, like, the production design is amazing. This movie, it's not very appealing. Like, there's some stuff here, but it's pretty bland.
It's grimdark.
I mean, you have, like, the ballroom set. You have that air traffic control tower at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Offices. You have warehouses that are indistinct.
This movie, 1997, probably plays a lot darker and more serious than now. It's, like, silly and goofy. And almost, like, comedically dark or comically dark.
It's because the effects
stick out. It was pretty silly in 97.
The effects stick out so much. Here's the backdrop, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like a piece of paper. Like,
I mean, like, Spawn himself, like, we look at him now and we're like, it works and it doesn't, but, like, back then, I could see just taking it a bit more seriously.
Should we be humming High of the Tiger or something? He really doesn't need a helmet.
He does have some fun lines where he's
oh,
like,
his superpower of riding motorcycles.
He does give him the guns and everything, and then he calls him Yoda. That's cute, right?
The Spawn cycle.
Thank you, Mr. Exposition.
Double fade right there.
That was awesome.
He puts the helmet on so his stunt guy can ride the motorcycle here.
Hey, whatever it takes.
I like that they ran out of costumes for clowns. They're like, just give him a trucker hat for this scene.
There you go.
That'll do it.
So why is he trying to stop him?
I'm not quite sure what the point of this chase is.
There's no point of this chase.
He says at the beginning, I'm going to get Spawn so riled up that he'll do something, something.
It's like, he's already pretty...
He seems like he's on his way to do whatever he's going to do. I don't know what this chase is going to do. But it has a key track from the soundtrack for a band to get excited about.
And it's expensive. I mean,
well, it looks expensive. They're driving a truck through stuff.
Yeah. We need a chase sequence, maybe?
Another Apocalypse Now reference.
Yep. There's a lot of stunts that I guess seem cool, but he's just kind of driving lazily next to explosions that happened way before and away from where he is. And then rides through the explosions for some reason. Like, the motorcycle...
Probably could have started with that.
The motorcycle chase in Terminator is better than this chase.
Right.
I guarantee you that was a toy right there.
Shields.
Yeah.
okay, he's just dropping toxic goo in the middle of the street. That's going to be a big problem.
In case there are any toons in the area, he's going to dip them. Spawn's this... loyal friends of the toons might help him out here.
But yeah, it's one of those, you know, that would be front page news. There's toxic goo in the middle of the street.
Yeah, but who's going to be playing for that? A random clown figure from hell that doesn't exist?
I mean, in terms of just, you know, consequence-free action.
Yeah, but I mean, the character is chaos incarnate. So it's like,
that's true.
I mean, it's not like Superman building up a building because it's not Superman. It's this clown character that doesn't exist in the real world.
He just die hard too, die hearted.
Yep. But it does lead to some
cool undead dudes don't look at explosions.
It does lead to some cool cape shots.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a transition through cape, of course.
With no fire.
This is the artsy scene.
Man, that D.B. Sweeney is good at computers.
D.B. Sweeney he's crushing that eyebrow work. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Here we go. Watch this one.
Huh? Reading secure files. Mm-hmm. Revealing plot.
Oh. Christ. Huh?
That graphic again.
I better shave.
So she hangs up child drawings and colorings on like the bedroom wall.
Yeah.
That stuff's for the fridge.
It is for the fridge. No one.
Hey, her father died.
Is that actually her father?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay, that one.
They established that in flashbacks. Oh, they're V-chatting, by the way.
That's right.
He's chatting with the journalist about the Heat 16 plan and everything. I guess this makes sense, but in the movie he works for A6, but the comics it's CIA, but I can understand that change. Yeah. There, I mean, as much as, you know, there's random changes here or there, this is pretty faithful to the material. It's like the source material. It's obviously taking one key story, but there's a lot of stuff that it's taking from the page that's fairly accurate to an extent. It's obviously done poorly, so that doesn't help. Also, another, like, things happening in reality that characters don't seem to respond properly to. Martin Sheen just walks in with a gun, and Terry's reaction is, hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Doesn't he have people that work for him that can take care of this crap?
Well, let alone just, like, his family's here, and he's just like, what are you doing here?
He's very James Brolin Amityville Horror right now.
And Teresa Rand, she just treats him like he's robbing him. Just take it and go. That said, Martin Sheen, rocking good slacks of a leather jacket, like he's making that work. Whatever's going on there. Must be a long drive to Wanda's house, by the way.
Right.
It seems like Spock could get around pretty easily, but he's taking forever.
Yeesh.
This clown character, they have no idea that it was their same birthday clown.
That's right. Despite... Hey, weren't you? Did we hire
him? Was a tune.
Yeah, he was a tune.
See? Good thing he didn't touch that dip himself. That's another favorite line of mine where he says, no duh to a child.
Yeah. That's cute.
That's a nice trick right there. Can we talk out the goal of this movie, of the plan of the bad guys? So Clown is teamed up with this Wynn character to essentially unleash hell on Earth, right? Is that the like overall goal?
Like hell and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and they recruit Spawn because he can lead this army because he's just that great of a killer. Like, all these thousands of people in Hell that they have waiting, they need a leader. So they need Spawn. So I guess after Hell is unleashed on Earth, then Spawn and the army will, like, rule over while they go to, I guess, invade Heaven? Is that the more or less the idea? That's what's going on here?
I don't know. It's...
Yeah, Spawn. Yeah, Spawn's supposed to lead this charge,
but he's reluctant.
Deciding not to,
because for some reason he has a soul still, which we can't quite comprehend why.
Well, he made a deal.
To what? To lead the army in order to see his wife again?
To see Wanda again?
But like, why is it okay? Why does he have a soul? I guess.
And Martin Sheen's gonna, like, kill everyone.
But somehow...
Satan doesn't want that to happen.
Well, they're gonna unleash this plague that's Heat 16, but Martin Sheen's somehow still gonna lead the world.
Like, why does the couple need Spawn if they're gonna just unleash Heat 16?
Well, because that's just Earth, though, right? That's the middle ground between Heaven and Hell. First you get rid of Earth, then you get rid of Heaven, I guess. Maybe they create more Spawns. Anyway, this is a part really
Wanda!
This is a really dense part where Wanda gets stabbed. Spawn does not seem to notice that she's glowing green from her and doesn't realize that that's not really his wife, because his wife obviously bled green when she was alive in a human.
Minor detail.
Spawn's easily
he's easily fooled.
Well, yeah.
He's kind of an idiot.
But I mean,
he's not trusting to lead Hell's Army.
He's very emotional. Which I don't think is a good for
him. I think one of the issues with this movie is that,
guys, this is first
point.
Out.
Do I believe that he has any interest whatsoever in leading El's army? So there is no moral dilemma. Will he do the right thing? Yada yada yada.
Because we shortcut our way through all of that. We get that flashback where Clown's like, "You made a deal." Cut to Spawn in terrible Hellland making some kind of deal. Why does he make this deal? I don't know. We'd spend no time with him in Hell. Like, what's the alternative option if he says no or what have you? Like, there's nothing done.
Well, a ball gag D.V. Sweeney.
They don't want him talking.
Gimp coming out?
He's a loud mouth.
Spawn is the Gimp.
So this is where Martin Sheen does, like, realizes, wait, my plan was really stupid because nobody knows that I have this pacemaker inside of me.
Feel the burn.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, kids were saying that one. They were like,
making Spawn relevant today.
They were like, Spawn Bond, guys. I know, right? Feel the burn. Oh, this is good. Okay, I guess I won't use all of these knives on this person.
It'd be funny if he's like, could you close your eyes? Please, I'm still gonna do this.
I like that Spawn's like, oh, here we go. Hold on, this is what bugged the hell out of me. As a child, I'm thinking, okay, so he's just using like X-ray vision to see what the thing is inside of him, but he didn't actually take it out just then. That'd be ridiculous. But no, I guess he just disabled it right then. That was it. That was the extermination of the plot right there, or the threat.
And yeah, that's the movie, right? Yay, Spawn wins.
Although, and as much as I love The Matrix Reloaded, I had a similar problem when Neo just reaches into Trinity and grabs a bullet out of her. Mainly because I think the effect is poorly done. But, you know, that's whatever. Still convinced that that's his wife, given that there's a glowy green dagger hanging in her.
Yeah. Well, it's a hell dagger, maybe, you know?
I guess. Well, no, but Martin Sheen did it. Like...
He has weapons from hell.
Okay, fair enough.
Spawn could, but he chooses, like, earth guns.
Yeah.
Could have just, like, not given up the game and sent Spawn on his way thinking he'd kill his wife.
Yeah, that's true,
right,
too.
Yeah.
Well, but, like, I don't know what the goal is right now. It's like,
I have no idea.
It's like they destroyed the Heat 16 thing, even though I presume there's still, you know, Heat 16 bombs all over the world that they could probably set off just as easily in some other way. Martin Sheen somehow realizes that this was a stupid plan all along.
Not a well-thought scheme.
Like, wait a minute.
I should not have trusted yoga hosers in this scheme.
I shouldn't have poked the bear who could rip me apart.
Like a Martin Sheen commentary on this movie.
I'd love a Martin Sheen.
What did you think of Spawn, sir?
I hope for the Scream Factory re-release that has a retrospective documentary. All Sheen all the time.
Did Emilio and Charlie come visit?
Often. They're huge Spawn fans.
He finally gets to use his knife.
And he slightly...
Oh, yeah, he's in this movie. That's right, that's right.
That's all?
He slightly cut
him. He said, ha, I'm here, and he runs away.
He cut him a little bit.
And I'll get you in Spawn, too.
He cut her ropes. Is that, you know...
Oh, yeah, that's right. He goes to, like, hell, right?
Yeah, he comes with... Yeah, they team up. He has the best line... He has the best badass line in the movie when they go down to hell.
Oh, that's right.
By the way, as a younger person, I used to think this was Eric Idle. Because I'm racist against white people. They all look the same to me.
All those British white people.
British white people.
Eric Idle looks like a copy of a copy of a VHS copy.
Yes.
Of a copy.
Hell looks like the coolest CD-ROM game from 1992.
Yeah, Doom 4 looks awesome. Or again, no, Doom 3 was way later than this movie, so I guess Doom 2.5 was great. Gecko, come and get your throat cut. Like, that's cool. That's a cool line, though. Like, that's fun.
And all of a sudden, the Violator looks crappy.
Well, he just doesn't look good against all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, every time he, like, shoves him against a wall, it's, like, the worst possible wall he can be shoved against. He cut off his knife thing, so I guess that's out now.
Yeah. With Aaron and Abe.
Yeah, thank you.
Ow.
I'm glad that this actor's last role had him, like, on a green screen being hurled around, by the way.
This is like, yeah, we get why he quit.
Well, did he die?
In 2011.
Oh.
He just retired after this.
He's like, yep, this is it. This is where we call it quits.
He kept Connery's house warm for him, I assume.
Everyone's got their welcome to Mooseport. I am so emotionally invested in this battle.
The gentlemen. Well,
they're doing their classic move of throwing them into stuff. Hell's Army's very creative.
Where is Hell's Army? Shouldn't there be more?
They're around.
You know, this is like the coolest battle in Killer Instinct. Combo!
I can't hear it, but I'm sure the soundtrack's amazing. Combo.
My weakness, being stabbed. Whoa, random fire. What happened?
It's a good...
Well, he got hit by lightning and is that it?
Why is there lightning there?
He just teleported. Because the storms are erratic in hell. There's the arc. There, the platforms are moving too slowly. That's
oh, wait, here we go. It's like Super Mario Bros. Wii. He's back, but huge now.
Tons of Michael Jai White's.
This actually does look like a Bowser level in Super Mario 64.
Right?
No, this is how Mario Wii ends.
Yeah. Look at that close-up of his face.
Oh, if Spawn just gets behind him and throws him by the tail, that would probably take him out.
Yeah.
Wait, one Spawn was floating in air, but looked like he was supposed to be standing on a platform in one of the...
Apparently he can do this.
Yeah, he has this power. Well, he can do anything he puts his mind to. He's like Thomas the Tank Engine. You think you can.
Let's do that for the 6th or 8th, spawning round the Hell's Gate.
Well, the other thing that this movie very poorly establishes is that Spawn does have limits to his powers. Like, he could drain himself. But this movie doesn't make that very clear at all, so it's like, well, why didn't he kill the entire army? I have no idea why he wouldn't kill the entire army. He just kind of kills some of them and leaves.
It's too late in the movie for flashbacks.
Then he uses, like, fart jetpack.
Yeah. Leguizamo taught him that in an early scene.
Good thing Hell has one opening, and it's in the Fitzgerald living room.
You think they're going to ask Martin Sheen to stay for dinner?
It seems like it.
Yeah, they kept him there, I mean...
Wait, are they gonna send him to jail? And how are they going to explain what the hell happened? Literally.
Okay, so this guy had a pacemaker that was going to destroy the world with a Heat 16.
Sheen's just like patiently waiting to be arrested. Like he's not being restrained in any way. He's just kind of sitting there. By the way, the movie's almost over. Like we've gone through this whole thing. We've had epic hell battles. The main character has been disposed of in some form or another. The main plot's over. Leguizamo's still about to like come back again, but you know, whatever. That was the last bit. You know, he's too old for this now, by the way. Like that was all he had left in him.
In that battle.
So apparently even when you're dead, you age, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he's currently reading the Jordan Rules. Nice. And Miko Hughes came over.
Yeah, he knew where they lived.
I live with you now?
No, he says a lie. He's like, I followed the dog here. That's how I knew where you lived. Somehow I found the dog. So me needing to find the dog seems unnecessary at this point because the dog just went home anyway. But we brought all the characters in the same room, so that's nice, right?
That is the dumbest kid on the face of the earth. Don't go to the supernatural fireplace.
Martin Sheen even knows better.
She likes looking at Spawn, so, you know, she's pretty intrigued by all this nonsense. To its credit, that Violator coming out of the wall looks better than when Freddy came out of the wall in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Yeah.
So it has that going for it. I like how the house doesn't get destroyed at all, even though a giant thing is fighting Spawn inside of it.
Use your armor. Thank you.
Okay, there's a small smash to the wall. That's it, though.
Martin, she's just sitting there.
He's like, I don't know about this.
I could escape right now, but...
That is a fun, like, okay, he did a thing, and he made, like, giant spikes go through him. But look how the house is not getting damaged. Like, in a world where I constantly get stressed out by when houses of characters get destroyed, not like cities, but houses, because it seems more personal, I'm like, I'm very happy this movie's like, oh, okay, like, things didn't get too badly damaged. That's nice. The insurance won't have to...
I mean, Lethal Weapon 4, where I can't enjoy the giant chase scene, because their house just got burned down.
And there's still cracking jokes a day later, though. Murtaugh, he still had his boat. So, actually, he didn't. It sunk, too, actually, at the beginning of the movie. What am I talking about? Never mind. He lost everything in that movie. And he retired at that point, right? Or pretty close to it, right? So he left the police force with nothing.
Except all the royalties of the romance novels.
That's true, yes. And a daughter who was knocked up by a cop he doesn't approve of.
Yes.
Lethal Weapon 4 is amazing.
Why can't we be friends?
We're not friends. We're family. Snapshot end credits.
Everybody's having babies.
That's the script that Shane Black wanted.
I will say this.
To be continued, I like the scene with
Joe Pesci and Mel Gibson in the cemetery.
His
speech about the frog is actually very sweet.
It is. No, I think there's a lot of good things in Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah, I think it's entertaining. I like
it more than Lethal Weapon 3. But
oh, he's confessing everything.
No, he said, I unwittingly participated, so he didn't know. So he's a patsy. So it's okay. He'll get off light. He's white, too, so he'll get off house arrest.
Find the pacemaker to prove it, bitches.
And their house is and their house isn't even damaged, so it's not even bad house arrest.
But they're going to arrest his daughter.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my God. she was the brains behind the operation, not Falcone.
It'd be funny if the slow-mo lifted and her eyes glue
green. She's the next Spawn.
And then that was the credits.
Why are they high-fiving this kid? I don't know.
He survived.
Did you stop that white house that's from that rich family from getting harmed? Yeah, I did, right? High five.
Is your father still dead? Okay,
yep.
High five.
All right, high five.
Can I live with you? No.
No. You can live in that dumpster where you spit out those sandwiches. The movie's over now, I guess. There's a very slow panning shot up to a roof again.
Dum 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 dum.
No, it's dum da da da.
Yeah, you got that dun, spiral. Da, da, da. He gave us a signal.
Da, 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 da.
And we're not left with much of a threat here, right? Like Leguizamo's head comes off, but then he kind of disappears, so we don't really know if he died or not. A lot of rats.
And Spawn destroyed hell.
Well, he just left hell. He didn't really destroy anything. Like he killed.
He destroyed all the spawns.
No, he destroyed some of the spawns. That's it. Like he saw all the spawns running at him after he fart jetpacked his way out. Like they're still there.
For another day.
We'll get a cool cape shot, so you know that's that. Then a wide shot of the cape. And then a turn to the camera. Is that in Darkman also? Do they do a turn to the camera like that? Doesn't he? Maybe? I don't know.
Oh, no. Darkman.
I know it's Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, he does. Yes, Bruce Campbell turns to the camera.
But isn't there like a turn to the camera at the end or something?
No, it's Campbell. That's it. And then he walks in the crowd.
It's in the crowd. Okay. Fair enough. Maybe it's in the sequels, like Darkman 3, Darkman Die. Here are these credits again, which they're not even, they have to be staggered, no less. Like, they're scratchy lines, they're blurred, they're staggered. It's the most, like, I'm surprised they're not going up, like in 7. Like, they're not going back reverse.
Right.
You got me closer to God.
Remix.
And Kevin Spacey as John Doe.
Yeah. We don't need to do a commentary in 7. There's like 2 excellent commentaries on that Blu-ray already. So
I think there's 4.
Yeah, there's 4, but there's 2 excellent ones.
Fair enough.
Those two involve Fincher. That's why he's very good at those. The others involve like the production people and the producer.
You can do Copycat if it's ever topical.
Copycat.
Oh yeah, I like Copycat.
No, they're turning. The credits are turning. They're not even straight anymore. They're on their axis.
Stop! I'm trying to read.
Are they going
to
be 90 degrees by the end of this?
We don't want the credits.
They're turning over. Ebert was all over this movie. he was all about Spawn. He was a Gen Xer all the way. I know it.
Oh, they're straightening out. Are they going to go the other way?
Are they going the other way? Yeah, exactly.
Yep, like, there they go.
There they go.
I'm going to get dizzy.
Oh, my God. I like all this Inferno imagery. It really sets me up for the Tom Hanks classic.
Mm-hmm. Ride the Inferno.
Ride the Inferno. That's what it's called. Right? Ride the Inferno.
Whereas Felicity Jones says, whew, I got Rogue One still.
Welcome back, Professor. I saw that trailer again the other day in theaters for the first time.
To a great reaction and applause, I'm sure.
Well, I was kind of disappointed because
Brandon's back.
It revealed to me that Ben Foster dies at the beginning of the movie, and he's not like the over-the-top villain in it. So now I'm like annoyed.
He's gotten to that point in his career where he's that, you know, big name opening kill.
Mm-hmm. He's the Drew Barrymore of his day.
Yeah. Oh, he's the big opener in X-Men: Last Stand that we talked about, of course.
Right.
Got those angel wings and that flying power. Where he runs. Spawn, this was a movie we talked about.
Ben Foster would make a good D.B. Sweeney, right?
Yeah, of course. That's what they called when he was young. They called him the next D.B. Sweeney.
That's right.
That's what they were saying.
He's a toe pick for sure.
I'm curious to know if like there are fans of Spawn out there. So if you've been listening to this commentary track, feel free to let me know.
I don't even remember people defending this movie much back in the day either.
Except Ebert. Except
Ebert. It was just, it kind of came, it went, and like the biggest reaction would be like, well, I didn't think it was that bad.
What did it open alongside, Scott? Air Force One was out?
Right? It was right in between Air Force One and the Conspiracy Theory.
What did it open with, I guess?
What was the competition? Don't remember.
Conspiracy Theory, that's like a forgotten like hit movie.
Yes, it is. I think Nathan Rabin did a Forgotbuster column on it.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Let's see, Spawn.
That's a good summer. I mean, that's a big summer. A lot of stuff happened in that summer.
It was an interesting summer. The first summer where I was, I guess, old enough or whatever that I actually didn't like a number of the big movies. I wasn't crazy about Lost World. Obviously, I didn't care for Batman and Robin. I didn't like Spawn. I liked Men in Black, but not as much as everybody else did. So for me, it was, and same thing with Hercules, didn't do anything for me. So for me, it was...
Fifth Element came out.
Fifth Element I liked. I thought it was fine.
I loved it.
But for me, it was Face Off, Air Force One, and Contact.
No, Face Off I absolutely loved. Face Off I definitely saw with my mom in a theater. It was great.
Face Off was awesome. Opened
against 187.
Oh.
Samuel Jackson drama. Picture Perfect, the Kevin Bacon, Jennifer Aniston romantic comedy. Uh-huh. And Air Bud.
Oh boy, it was a busy weekend. August was rocking.
Yep. And
that's a busy
2 weeks later, we had Copland, Event Horizon, and Steel.
I saw Copland in theaters. I didn't see Event Horizon until it came on video. Or HBO, I think. And it was like, wow, that's a really creepy movie.
I saw that in opening night. Scared the crap out of me.
There's some stuff happening. And say what you will about how derivative it might be. There's some stuff happening in that movie that's really
that's
that was a rare situation where I was so genuinely on edge the entire time that I left the theater genuinely uncomfortable. And I left the theater with maybe a stomach ache, and it took me until I got to my car. I was like, wait a minute. That movie scared the crap out of me.
Wait, are you talking about Steel, or are you talking about...
Steel. So, Air Bud.
Air Bud, yeah.
See, Contact was out that summer. My Best Friend's Wedding was out that summer, which I quite like. Con Air, of course.
George of the Jungle was surprisingly good.
George of the Jungle was great. That's it's ahead of its time for what it was.
That
doing.
Was leggy as hell.
Liar, Liar. That was Jim Carrey's huge thing.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Spring, but yes.
But yeah, it came out this. Yeah, that's right. It was just. Yeah. It was just a huge hit, right? Like it just.
Oh yeah, massive. Oh, yeah.
And it was the 90s, so movies could stay there for a long time.
Yeah.
They didn't have to worry about something huge opening right after it or the same weekend.
Yeah, you wouldn't lose a 30-year screens in the fourth weekend, even if you were doing well. Secret Life of Pets is already in second-run theaters tomorrow.
These credits are still a lot of credits. Oh, my God.
It's long, yeah.
The Lost World was making, like, as much as I hate that movie, this movie was making money. Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
That was comparatively, for that era, it was quick kill. It did 92-ish in the first 4 days. Did 228, 229 total.
Yeah, because it wasn't
it's still huge.
It's still it's huge, but it's one of those, you know.
There's
an animated logo at the end.
Oh, wow.
Pull down your pants pictures. Okay.
Dippy Goldman Williams. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yeah, conspiracy theory. That was a... Wait, that's 90s. When did Lethal Weapon 4 come out? Was that 98?
98, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Because I know Donner, he made those, back-to-back and, super quick.
Well, they had to... I don't remember what got delayed, but something... Superman Returns didn't get... Or
Superman
Lives
didn't get... Yeah,
didn't
yeah
get
that's right.
So they made what they went for in lightning speed for that summer 1998 slot.
And they had it... Because they had to shoot that whole, opening action sequence, which I do think is quite awesome. They had to shoot that, quick
fire
in
the hole.
For the teaser trailer. They had to, get that going.
Yeah.
Right.
We should talk about movies one day.
That traffic chase with the house on the portable home. That I like that.
No, aside from the final fight between old people and Jet Li, it's a really great action movie.
I like the fight between old people and
Jet Li. It's honest, though.
Because they have to cheat, so it's realistic.
Yeah, I don't know how
it's not that realistic. It's not going to that place. I don't know how realistic Jet Li is fighting Danny Glover and Mel Gibson. But they do cheat at the end, he would have got the better of them way before that. But anyway, regardless, before I get to my Lethal Weapon marathon that I'm about to watch right now, we've been talking about Spawn. That was 100 minutes well spent, I would say, reliving this movie. Better than Steel, so it has that going for it.
Is it?
I would say so. There's no free throw jokes in this movie. So,
But at least Steel is about something.
You save it for the article, Scott. You can go
it doesn't mean it's good.
We've been talking Spawn. Anyone that's been listening all the way through and watching the movie or just listening through in general, thanks.
Sorry.
It's been interesting reliving this movie multiple times in 1 week. Now we know what that was like, and we can only hope that movies featuring, or TV series even, with Luke Cage coming, featuring black actors in the lead can, go better direction. I mean, we had the Blade series, that was a nice thing, and now we've kind of been dry for a while, with the exception of, Will Smith in a terrible movie and a few Men in Black sequels. But
still working on top in Blade 3. I mean... Yeah. Bars tie.
Obviously, I'm talking lead roles. Obviously, there's been black characters in other superhero movies, but, Anyway, Brandon Peters, where can people find more of your work online?
Cult Cinema Cavalcade, cultcinemacavalcade.com, and on iTunes. Twitter handle @BTPeters. Our episode, when this drops, will probably be Deathstalker 2 we'll be talking about. So going into our second year, we're doing a sequel to a movie we talked about in our first year. So,
oh, here we go. The last week of August, or the second to last week, G.I. Jane, Money Talks, which I love, Mimic, Leave It to Beaver, Masterminds with Vincent Kartheiser, A Smile Like Yours of Greg Kinnear, and Pippi Longstocking all open. And wow. A Dirty Dancing re-release.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Conan O'Brien one, yes.
What?
I remember that. What? Conan O'Brien had this huge campaign like on his show for like 3 weeks or like a month, like talking about how the Dirty Dancing anniversary was coming up and like was having like people, you know, like call in, we gotta do this, and was like doing these funny things with clips on his show with him and Richter, and then they finally like announced the re-release on Conan O'Brien and had the trailer and stuff, and then the following episode he's like, you know what, we got this movie back in theaters, but I think I made a mistake, I think I was talking about Flashdance. But it was really a really funny campaign with him and Weinberg and Richter like just playing clips and stuff from Dirty Dancing and snarkly.
Geez, September was pretty good. The Game came out. LA Confidential.
Oh yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Wishmaster. The
Wishmaster.
I like the Peacemaker. I've defended that movie for a long time.
Peacemaker versus Wishmaster.
That's a solid action flick for sure. But this movie's still going, by the way. It's going through all the different languages of like FBI warnings, which I'm kind of entertained.
Oh, it's Warner Brothers, man. They load them up, those warnings.
Let's see, The Edge.
In and Out.
In and Out. Full Monty was spreading wider and wider. I love the Full Monty. Mm-hmm. The Ice Storm. Kiss the Girl. Oh, that's October now.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
It's a lot of good.
And Devil's Advocate, which I still love.
Is that it? October somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here it is.
Where I got beaten by I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
At which point I realized I'm officially an old man.
I'm checking to a year later to see what I Still Know What You Did Last Summer beat.
Oh, not as much as you'd think, if I recall.
No, that movie wasn't popular. I mean, it made money, but...
Let's see. November...
Let's see. I've been stalling long enough now because I think... I can get another guest in this pod, or not a guest.
Holy crap.
I can get our co-host into this episode right now to say a little something-something before we wrap up. As soon as he picks up the call, any second now, as I look for I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, here he is.
What?
He's there. He made it.
Nice. What I missed.
And that was Spawn. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
I was sitting in the back so quietly eating my Jujubes while you guys were talking. So, you know.
I Still Know What You Did Last Summer opened
November 13th.
Under the Water Play. And ahead of Meet Joe Black.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Abe, you missed all of this movie.
No. I'm here for the next showing.
Oh, okay, good. Well, as Scott, we're going to be find more of your work online.
Forbes. Ticket Booth Forbes. You all know the drill by now.
It's been, okay, it was 5 minutes and 39 seconds of FBI warnings in the various languages, so I got through all that.
They meant it.
Yeah. And, okay, so with, you can find all my work at thecodeofzeke.com. You can find me on Twitter at @AaronsPS4. You can find this podcast at iTunes, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, and everywhere else. You can find us
everywhere.
Facebook.com/outnowpodcast, Twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Feel free to listen to our main episodes of the week. We just recently got to our 250th episode, and we're still going strong from there. We'll be back with next month with another commentary check. What's next month? September?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Blair Witch?
Blair Witch.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows.
All of Seven Samurai, in anticipation for Magnificent Seven, of course. We'll do a 3-hour commentary. It'll be great.
All right.
But yeah, no, we'll come up with something. Probably be pretty good.
It's our lot in life.
Because that's what we set the bar pretty low, so probably pretty good is what we're going for. But yeah, I think that's going to do it. So Scott and Brandon, thank you for joining me for this commentary track.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a spawn of a good time.
What about Abe?
Abe, thanks for gracing us with your presence in these final minutes.
You're welcome. Would you guys like some Jujubes?
Of course. Pass them over.
All
right. And until next time, that's going to do it. So long.
Bye, goodbye.